Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dan Aronson, broadcasting from the banks of the mighty Willamette River in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Press One for Democracy at our new showtime, 6 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, which gives our friends out on the East Coast a few more hours of sleep when they tune in each Monday night. Now we're starting, of course, out here at 9 instead of 10. So, again, welcome in. We have what I think is an excellent topic for this evening. We are just having unearthed for us the second large banking scandal of the year. And this one has epic implications and other proportions. And so we are going to try to discuss that today, see if there's anything we can do about it. Or maybe, the sad truth is we just have to resign ourselves to the fact that it's gotten out of hand. We've let these folks get too big. We can't bail them. We can't jail them. We have to bail them out, or at least that's what we're told. But in the end, the one thing that is true, the one thing that cannot be denied, is that none of these things can go on without the complicitness of governments. And as we'll discuss tonight, we're not now just talking about the U.S. government, which of course was key in the crash of 2008. Key in the evisceration of the middle class in this country over the last 30 years, but not just them. Now we're talking about problems on an international scale. Very scary problems. So, wanted to start out tonight by reading an introduction to the article by Matt Taibbi in the Rolling Stone magazine, which was entitled "Everything is Rigged: The Biggest Price Fixing scandal ever." So, you read that, obviously it's a nice headline grabber or attention grabber for a headline, but the question is, does the bulk of the content really live up to that? And that's what we're going to decide tonight. He started out by saying, "Conspiracy theorists of the world, believers of the hidden hands of the Rothschilds and the Masons and the Illuminati." And as we know, we have a few of those regular callers who are those people. "We skeptics owe you an apology. You are right. The players may be different, but your basic premise is correct. The world is rigged. The world is a rigged game. We found this out in recent months when a series of related corruption stories spilled out of the financial sector, suggesting the world's largest banks may be fixing the prices of, well, just about everything. You may have heard of the LIBOR scandal, something that this reporter talked about not too long ago, in which at least three, and perhaps as many as 16, of the name brand too-big-to-fail banks have been manipulating global interest rates in the process of messing around with the pieces of upwards of $5 trillion, that's trillion with a T, worth of financial instruments. When that sprawling con burst into public view last year, it was easily the biggest financial scandal in history. MIT professor Andrew Lowe said of it, dwarfs by orders of magnitude any financial scam in the history of markets. That was bad enough, but now the LIBOR may have a twin brother. Word has leaked out that the London-based firm ICAP, the world's largest broker of interest rate swaps, is being investigated by American authorities for behavior that sounds eerily reminiscent of the LIBOR mess. Regulators are looking into whether or not a small group of brokers at ICAP may have been working with up to 15 of the world's largest banks to manipulate ISDA fix, a benchmark number used around the world to calculate the prices of interest rate swaps. Interest rate swaps are a tool used by cities, major corporations, and sovereign governments to manage their debt, and the scale of their use is almost unimaginably massive. It's about $379 trillion market, meaning that any manipulation would affect a pile of assets about 100 times the size of the United States federal budget. It should surprise no one that among the players implicated in this scheme, to fix the prices of interest rate swaps are some of the same mega banks, including Barclays, UBS, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and the Royal Bank of Scotland, that serve on the LIBOR panel that set global interest rates. In fact, in recent years, many of these banks have already paid multi-million dollar settlements for anti-competitive manipulation from one or in one form or another. In addition to LIBOR, some were caught up in anti-competitive scheme detailed in the Rolling Stone last year to rig municipal debt service auctions. Through the jumble of financial acronyms sounding like gibberish to the layperson, the fact that there may now be price-fixing scandals involving both LIBOR and ISDA fix suggests a single giant mushrooming conspiracy of collusion and price-fixing hovering under the ostensibly competitive veneer of Wall Street culture. And I'm going to go ahead and jump in here and into the chat room and post where you can get this article. Let me just cut and paste that in there. That did not seem to work. Let me try that one more time. A little copy and a little paste. Bam. So there you have the URL in the chat room now to the rest of this article. It's scary stuff, folks. It's very, very scary stuff. And there's a lot of questions, obviously, that surround this. The biggest one for me is always, what can we do about it? You all know me to be a person of always looking for solutions and always looking for what actions can be taken to bring these folks down. But as this ball of yarn unravels, it just seems like, whereas we try to unravel the ball of knot, it's seeming more like a ball of yarn. It's seeming more like, I think, a Gordian knot than anything else. And I don't know any other way other than to slash right through it to get to the heart of the matter and to figure out how we can solve this mess. But nonetheless, that's just me and my opinion. This is a Coffee Talk radio show, which means this is a call-in show. And the number to call in there is 646-929-2495. And when you get into the queue, if you'd like to speak, go ahead and press 1 and a little exclamation mark will come right up on my screen here, and I'll get you right into the queue or at least let you know how long it'll be till I can get you onto the show. But for now, I see the chat room is filling up. We've got a couple of callers on the line, although not in queue. So, again, I just wanted to welcome you to Press One for Democracy. This is Dan Aronson, and happy to be back. I apologize for the scheduling mess last week, but I hope I saw that there were several hundred people that were entertained by a show that we had replayed that I had done before I started Press One for Democracy, when I was just subbing in for Egberto Willis one day, which is a little bit different kind of show. And in actuality, Egberto and I have talked about doing a series of cross shows where I will be joining him on his show. He'll be joining me on mine. Egberto and I kind of have the same tilt that you'll find here on Tuesday nights with the Middle Ground with Eric Beiler and Michael Charney, of course, every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Egberto and I tend to be a little bit more to the, passionate side. No, that's probably not right. Emotional side, let's call it like it is. I had the chance to spend a couple of days with Egberto in the at the board retreat, and while we weren't doing and discussing board business, we got into some very colorful discussions. It's fun, too, because Egberto and I agree about a lot, but we don't necessarily always think we don't always chart the same route to get to the end game, but we do agree a lot on what the end goals need to be and how we can fix what ails these countries. So, again, welcome in. I hope I didn't catch too many people off guard with our new time. It looks like a lot of people did get the memo. But again, this is a call-in show, and we'd love to hear from you. Or if you want to start chatting stuff into the chat room while we are waiting for guests to call in, I'll certainly be happy to engage you in that way as well. So, again, we're talking about the newest scandal. And, again, this is an international scandal. So we're talking – this is the ISDA fix, which is – it's funny that it has the name right in there. It's a fix because that's exactly what investigators are trying to do to figure out right now is whether or not that these folks were whether they were manipulating this index. Now, interesting thing about the ISDA fix, unlike a lot of other indexes, the ISDA fix is 100% calculated manually, right? So this is not something where you've got a supercomputer or a series of supercomputers crunching numbers and data based on actual trades, you know, tracking trends, et cetera, et cetera. This is something where a very small group of people get together and decide what the price of a default credit swap should be. Now, if we wanted to go back even further, we can talk about default credit swaps and what exactly those things are. And of course, you know, I think a lot of people are very familiar because that was one of the key factors that created the 2008 crash. Basically, default credit swaps are a way that that people will manipulate or not manipulate. See, I've already jumped to that conclusion. I don't mean to do that. Let's wait for the investigation. But I'm just probably convinced that that's where it's going. But it's the way they manage debt, right? So it has to do with trading instruments to hedge against the debt, a debt that you have, a severe debt. As was mentioned in the article, it could be something on that a municipal government will use to fund a major project, you know, perhaps a new bridge like we're building here in Portland for our light rail system, or it could be a major corporation. It could be you know, just about anything where a large debt is drawn upon to fund a project. And it allows people to hedge against rising interest rates. So that is where it goes, you know, hand in hand with the LIBOR, right? Because the LIBOR is the index which dictates the worth of or the interest rates of variable credit securities. So you probably have lots of credit cards like I do. Well, if you do, some of them are undoubtedly tied to the LIBOR. You'll have your interest rate will be tied to the LIBOR, which is similar to a variable credit rate based on prime plus. So, so now you start to see the real you know, deviant behavior that's going on here is that, you know, first we're going to manipulate the interest rate itself, and then we're going to manipulate the price of the securities that are used, that are traded, you know, bought and sold to protect or hedge against the rises in the interest rates. So certainly if I'm fixing the interest rates themselves, well, then I know when they're going up, don't I? And I know when they're going down, and therefore, you know, it's the ultimate insider trading where I have this information. I know exactly what's going to happen, and I can trade on that information, and I can profit, you know, by the – virtually exponentially or virtually as much as I want. So that's what we're looking at today. And I see that I have a special guest still getting the question mark, but I'll ask her about that as I open up my microphone. Hello, Miss Debbie Lynn. How are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I am speaking more than I'd like, but that's
that
okay.
Kind of
I really appreciate
it.
I'm sorry?
I thought that was kind of a long monologue for you.
Yeah, it is. You know me. I'd like to get right to the callers and let the people have their say. That's what this is about. This is not for me to get up and have a soapbox. This is our call-in show that we like to let everybody have their say. So, have you been following this latest of scandals?
You know, until I saw your email today, I hadn't really heard about it. But you know me. I'm kind of a media shutout. In that I try not to listen to much of the mainstream media. So I just wondered, is this at an international level? Is this going to be something where, you know, I mean, we know that our government is kind of gutless as far as they think everybody in the banking industry is too big to jail. Is this something where we actually might see, like, you know, somebody go to jail over this?
Well, I'm sure that would be nice, and I, you know, again, not a lawyer, and not dispensing legal advice or making legal opinions, but, you know, so the L in LIBOR stands for London, so we know these are all, and just like that, this index is a UK-based index. So my first question would have to be, who has jurisdiction in a case like this? I know that the
yeah, right.
I know where the U.S. It's the U.S. that's actually investigating.
Okay.
But I don't know enough about the legal nature. I do know that we that Barclays was made to pay $2.5 million fine for the LIBOR rigging, which was kind of a slap in the face, walking around money for those guys.
It's when they're a multi-billion-dollar industry. I mean. You know, I love your question that you sent out. It's like, are we gullible, stupid, weak, or powerless? I mean, you did not give us a positive, you know, multiple choice answer. You know, Dan kind of setting us up there.
Well, go ahead. Give me a positive alternative. I love it. Go for it.
Well,
are we empowered?
You know, or angry, you know? Activated by this. I mean, there's got to be something else. You know, but I'm just uninformed because I don't listen to mainstream media, and even if I did, I don't know how much I would believe.
Yeah, no, you got a great point, and honestly, I did not. This was something I was just perusing the web over the weekend, and ran across this, and as I dug deeper and deeper, I mean, there was actually things posted about this back in even earlier in April. So it's an unfolding story. You know, I think we're all going to find out more and more about it as it goes along.
Yeah.
But if you remember back at, you know, in the days of the LIBOR scandal, which at that time dwarfed what happened in 2008 with our personal, personal issues in this, when I say personal, I mean, this, you know, the stuff that happened within the U.S. And I said, well, how are they going to fix this? I mean, virtually every human being on Earth that has credit was affected negatively by the LIBOR scandal.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you. I didn't get a check. I didn't get I'm sorry, we're going to lower your interest rate. I didn't. There was no compensation to me. Did you get anything?
No notice that I knew of.
So that brings me back to my question, which you know, you pointed out, I posed as part of the announcing the show, which is, well, what are we? I mean, we knew in 2008 who the bad guys were. We bailed out the bad guys. We got nothing for it. And then they paid them their bonuses. Then the LIBOR scandal hit. There were serious fines levied against these organizations, you know, what you and I may think is serious, what they went, whatever. Did we get anything out of that? No. So even if it comes to light that these people are rigging this game, this index, and even if there's fines, why should you and I, or anybody listening to this radio show, think that there's going to be any compensation?
Well, I just posted a question in the chat room. You know, what would we like to see happen? You know, what's possible?
That's a great question. I personally want to see somebody go to jail. I mean, then obviously there's the, you know, the concept of re-regulation as opposed to deregulation. And I think more and more what's making sense to me is an alternate form of bank that isn't Wall Street based.
Well, you know, I have somebody, I don't know a whole lot about this, but I have somebody who's been talking a lot about the state bank in North Dakota. Do you know much about that?
Not familiar. Can't say that I am.
Okay. I mean, basically, what I do know about it is that the returns from the bank in North Dakota go back to the state and to the citizens of the state. And so the profit motive, you know, for the, because the ownership is the state, it is, it's not going to executive bonuses, I guess you could say. And it's going back to the people. So that, you know, that's one possibility. It's an interesting, you know, way to do it.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. I'll tell you what, we have another caller who has asked to join in the conversation, so I'm going to bring area code 360 in, 360. Can you please tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what your feelings on this whole mess are?
Yeah, hello. My name is Chris Henry. I'm from Paulsville, Washington. And,
hi, Chris. How are you? Welcome.
What's that?
I said, how are you, and welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing great. Yeah, I read this article on Friday, and I was as shocked about it as you were. One of the things that was struck me funny was the idea of the low-level guys trading day-old sushi to manipulate these rates that affect, you know, millions of people and banks that could potentially bankrupt cities and municipalities. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's so reckless. I don't know, it boggles the mind. It's like, how evil is evil? You know what I mean? Because whatever that is, it seems to be 10 or 15 times worse. So,
yeah.
You know, what it always comes back to me is okay, let's say we know it happened. Let's say we've got him dead to rights. What's the outcome we'd like to see, and how do we avoid this in the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Eric Holder said these guys are too big to jail. And the federal judge dismissed the case because who knows why, but the argument was pretty lame, saying that you know, everyone was foolish to think that banks were competing anyways. That seemed in itself a reckless decision.
I'm not familiar with this case. Where was it? Do you know where this case was?
That was in the article.
Oh, I apologize. Okay. All right. Right. Sorry.
They dismissed the case in federal court. Hopefully it'll be appealed.
Yeah, it seems ridiculous to invoke caveat emptor as the defense. Like, we should have known better.
Yeah.
I mean, I read that intro. I don't know if you've been on since the beginning of the show, but I read the introduction to the Rolling Stone article. And, you know, I maybe scratched the surface of being able to understand what they're talking about. I mean, you know, I don't know anybody who's not a financial whiz or somebody who's actually, you know, made a livelihood studying this stuff, or who was in the game that actually understands it. So how can you invoke buyer beware when we have no clue what these people are talking about? I mean, at least I don't.
Yeah, it's really rigged because there's no transparency whatsoever. The idea that the global economy and supposedly sovereign nations, especially in the time of democracy, is controlled by private banks. Even in the United States, our whole money supply is controlled by private banks. We don't, as a nation, don't have the right to, you know, coin our own money. That's done. It's done through a private entity. It's incredible.
Now, well, privatization, deregulation, you know, and everything else that has been done to tip the playing field in favor of the already wealthy and the already haves further.
I agree. I like to invoke a quote by Thomas Jefferson. I think he wrote this to John Adams. He said, in essence, that in regards to the sovereignty of our nation, the danger of that, he feels private or banks are a larger danger than standing armies.
I'm sorry, then what? The banks were a larger danger than...
The banking establishment is a larger danger to our nation than standing armies.
Oh, okay, standing armies. Well, sure. Right. Yes.
And that still holds true today. I had the privilege of helping a senator in the state of Washington try to pass legislation to do a state bank, much like North Dakota. And it might get traction this time because of the marijuana law. Because right now, no private bank will help do a checking account for any of these establishments, these businesses that are trying to start up.
Oh, that's ironic.
Because
that would put them in jeopardy with the federal government.
Right. And so the lawmakers are obviously drooling over the potential revenue that could be gained by that. So
I love it.
That's hilarious. And I hate to keep driving back to my question. Do you think there's anything we can do about this?
I think the scope and scale is so large. What we could do is maybe petition our city attorneys, the local district attorneys, because every municipality has been affected by this. And maybe through a local level, grassroots level, we could spur some interest into the story and demand justice. Because it's ridiculous that no justice is being served.
So kind of take the approach that the states did to get big tobacco.
Yeah, that's a good example, yeah.
Yep. You know what? I like that. I'm writing it down. And I'm going to give you credit for it, Chris. Chris said we should. No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. So we should find everybody who, right, every municipality, every state, every government that has loans out that are affected by this index. Yeah, I love it. And you know the fun thing that my friend here, Debbie Lynn, has taught me about transpartisanship is it really works best at local levels, where people are really in it together.
Yep.
Yeah, this is something that should be able to get widespread, bipartisan, or multipartisan, because, of course, at the local levels, I think a lot of people have, I think here in Oregon we have, and in Portland we must have 7 or 8 parties, but I think there's nothing like something like this to get everybody together and working together.
Yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity, really an opportunity to seize on this, to really wake people up to the fact that, you know, the fact of how money is created in essence and how it's being manipulated and how we're all affected by it. A lot of people aren't aware.
Well, and it's funny, too. So I started, not only did I start digging around and looking for other articles on this particular subject, but one of the things I did is I said, oh, I really like this guy's writing, Matt. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right. It's Taibbi.
Taibbi.
Okay.
It's not Taibbi. Something like that. He's a pretty famous journalist.
Yeah, exactly. So I looked at some other things. So here's something he filed. Just 2 days or 3 days earlier, on April 26th, on similar and similarly disturbing, right? The obscene greed and arrogant stories emanating from Wall Street are piling up so fast it's getting hard to keep up. This one is from last week, but I missed it. It's about the foreclosure robo-signing settlement that was concluded earlier this year. Anybody know about this one?
Yes, I was directly affected.
Yep.
So did you get your $300?
Yep.
I didn't get mine yet.
You didn't get yours yet? While the consultants that the government hired to go over these loans received $2 billion. which was over 20% of the total settlement amount.
You do the math on how much was given to the banks in terms of direct money through the TARP program or 0% interest loans or near zero loans. Think of upwards to $16 trillion we gave them in no percentage rate loans, which they turn around and charged us, 5-10%. So they made money off of that. And then the settlement, it's not even a fraction of 1%.
Yeah, and one of my favorite little footnotes to that story about when we did the bailout was asked by an African American Congress lady. She was so sharp. I want to say she's from Michigan, but don't quote me on this. But there's a great YouTube video where she says, where she gets them to admit that they took fees when we gave them the money. The bank took fees for accepting the bailout money. That's what I'm saying. It just boggles the mind. The depth of corruption and
alternate
just
reality.
Amoralness, and I don't know if that's a word, but it just this amoralness that exists now, and it exists in Washington, it exists on Wall Street, and the two of them are in bed together, and we're just out.
Yeah, we're not represented at all in our representative democracy.
Yep, I hear you. I hear you. So you have some good folks up there in Washington. What's the name of the city you're in?
I live in Paulsboro.
I'm not familiar. Is that Seattle area or mid-state?
Yeah, near Bremerton.
Okay. All right. And you like your representatives there?
Yeah, actually, we do have a new congressman, Derek Kilmer, and. I was really impressed with him. He visited our work. We manufacture prosthetics, and he came in and asked how we can help. And one of the things I mentioned is the way they pay Medicare, and they do regulations. They knee-jerk regulation that causes the whole industry to react, and then they change their mind. And we had to go through a bunch of hoops as a manufacturer to meet these new requirements, and they didn't serve a good purpose. It had no medical or scientific backing for why they wanted to do it. And I said, it would be nice if they took the time to understand the situation before making decisions. And that's what my humble request was.
You're right. Yes, and I'm sorry, but I'm flabbergasted by the simplicity of your request, and frustrated by the fact that you actually have to make it.
He was aware. What I found out is a lot of our representatives really don't know of these deeper issues, and they're focused on the things that interest them, and they're told answers by lobbyists for the most part, and so they don't know.
Well, yeah, and that was the exact point I was about to make, right? Enter the lobbyist. Oh, don't worry, you don't have to think, I'll think for you. And to convince you that you should let me think for you, here's $1 million towards your next campaign.
Yep. And what do we have to offer? One vote, and
That's it. Well, I have a personal agenda to take care of this, but it's going to take the 98% to become really the 98% instead of what is in essence, probably 98.1%. We're going to have to figure out how to get together and unify, and we're going to have to find a common theme. And people, that's the one that I always have a trouble with, is that a common theme, a common issue, and we're going to have to get past these much more divisive issues that don't seem to get anywhere and that just seem to be burning legislative cycles. I mean, they're important, don't get me wrong, the gun control issues of the world and women's right to choose and all that whatnot. I mean, they're great issues. We have to figure out how to get to those, But I think if we don't get the economy right, do any of those else really matter?
Well, I think not just the economy, Dan, but the corruption. It's, you know, the economy and the corruption, I think, are so closely intertwined right now. Because, you know, I've been writing a lot today just about, you know, everything else put together. If you just stand back and look at the whole picture, we've got breakdowns in banking, which is what we're focused on tonight. We have breakdowns in our food system where, you know, the GMOs are just taking over our complete food supply chain, whether we want them to or not. We have, you know, on the gun control, our legislators are not doing what we've asked them to. 85 to 90% of the people wanted background checks, and the Senate, you know, it's not going anywhere. We have a breakdown in our energy policy where no matter how many people are saying we don't want the Keystone Pipeline, it's going to happen anyway. You know, and you can go through sector after sector in our government and the decisions that our legislators are making right now, and there is so much corruption that nothing that the citizens are asking for is happening.
Yep. Well, exactly. And it's the big, you know, circle, right? So
mm-hmm. Yep.
I buy influence so that I get my way. I get my way, and that suppresses the, I meaning big business and the wealthy get my way. That suppresses the voice mm-hmm. of the little people. That's us. And therefore we have no voice. And therefore, in the end, the people that go to Washington only serve the big business. It's this downward spiral that is just. But that again gets me back to we have to find the one issue that will unite us.
Because if I may interrupt, here's a thought.
Please do. No. This is your show, not mine.
As you know, we've been brainwashed to think that taxes are bad and that lowering taxes is good. And that, I mean, even our Democratic representatives don't dare talk about raising taxes to any great extent. And what if we frame this issue, because maybe this is the issue that unites people. If the fact that this corruption is taking money away, it's like a hidden tax.
Yeah.
If we could use their own language against them, and that's what I've
mm-hmm.
been always trying to think, use their own propaganda and brainwash against them, you know, maybe we have a winning ticket.
Well, I like it. I like it. It's and you know, I don't know that necessarily they're actually as hidden as all that. You know, when you talk about things like subsidies to, you know, to oil companies, which are already making billions of dollars in profit, and you know, or as a lot of people call it these days, corporate welfare,
yeah.
You know, trickle up economics, whatever. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 110%. Stopping the corruption and returning government to the people is the fix all.
Well, I just hear this. Chris, when you say that, I hear this double entendre. You know, the corruption is taxing our system.
Yeah, there you go. Let's end that corporate tax against the people.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually similar to another one of the I hate to call them memes because I have somewhat of a negative stereotype on memes, but one of the memes that was actually one of our board members, Jeanine Loudon, came up with is that we should talk about freeing the elected, right? It's like, we know it's not your fault. You're slave to these corporations and these special interests because of the system, and we're going to change the system so we can free you so that you can do the job that you were sent to Washington to do, which is to represent your constituents.
Correct. Free you to act on your conscience. How about that?
I would take that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
in a way,
I feel bad for Obama. I really think that he does, you know, I hope that he has a conscience to do the right thing, but his hands are literally tied. You know, that's my best spin on the way he's been behaving. But I think there's some truth in it, that if he really acted on his conscience, he could end up like John F. Kennedy.
Well, that's an interesting thing you just said. I assume you mean death.
There are certainly those conspiracies out there. I have heard them. And not just him, but his entire family.
Yeah.
So we are slaves to the corruption. We are literally shackled in chains, can't do anything about it. And then those that might do something about it are slaves to the fear of retribution, not just political, but now physical.
Yeah. There's plenty of examples. You might have heard of. It was Bernie Madoff who went to jail for corruption. During that same time, there was another colleague who was going to spill the beans and really explain what was going on. His Cessna mysteriously crashed, very much like the CIA hits that were done in the 80s. That was on the Tom Hartman show a few years ago, and it's real in my mind.
Wow. Well, maybe it's time to sell everything I have and head to Belize. Just live out my life as a beach bum.
No, we got to fight. I mean, as a Christian, I believe we're put on this earth to fight for justice. I mean, it's not just to have an easy life and be comfortable. And we have to act on our conscience. And we're all going to die anyways. I feel bad for Guantanamo, what they're doing. I mean, gosh, how horrible. But they're doing what they have to do. And, you know, God bless them for that. That's incredible. And, you know, and I can say that, and it's not easy. I don't know what I'd do in a time of crisis, but, yeah, you know, so at some point we have to do something.
Well, I agree, we just started the Judeo-Christian, because I'm Jewish, so we just started the Judeo-Christian, Center for Justice.
There you go.
That's it. It's you and Debbie Lynn?
Sure,
oh, there we
Jewish
go.
Or,
now we're a force
I'm
of three.
I'm not Jewish or Christian, but okay.
Well, then we're the trans-religious. We're the trans-religious Center for Justice. We could be the Justice League. No, wait, that one's already taken.
we'll come up with something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chris, really appreciate all of your input tonight. Great conversation. Great ideas. Love that you're willing to stand up and fight. Even if we're doing the Don Quixote thing, jousting windmills and dreaming the impossible dream. You're absolutely right. We've got to keep on. We can't give up. I just out of curiosity, are you a member of the coffee party, Chris?
I'm on the mailing list, but I'm still recovering. I'm in debt, and I'm recovering from my bankruptcy and foreclosure. And I know I got excuses, but. I believe I'm a member, but I haven't been contributing.
Well, I tell you what, have you heard of the 535 program?
No.
Oh, okay. And I see our friend Patrick from Patrick Thompson from Atlanta is on the phone. So, Patrick, we'll get to you one second. I think this is a good time to talk about the 535 program. So if you go to the Coffee Party USA website and you go to /535, you'll see this new project that we're undertaking. And what it is we are going to establish 535 people as our liaisons to the various congressional leaders. And we are going to get them on record to start with. We're going to get them on record for their concepts and their ideas on campaign finance reform and getting their ideas for getting money out of politics. And we're going to establish this great website where people can go, click on interactive maps, and find out exactly what their representatives are at least saying they're planning on doing, right? And then come election time, we'll post compare and contrast for all the candidates who are running for those various congressional seats and senatorial seats. So And so I don't know if that's something you'd be interested in volunteering for, but if you go
yeah.
to that coffeepartyusa.com/535, you can, like I said, there's a map. You can click on it, drill down to your district, and we'd love to have your help in helping to drive special interest money out of Congress.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you very much. I like to contribute on my ideas and meeting with representatives. You know, I'm a member of Move On as well as Move to Amend. Mostly Move to Amend because I really that's where I feel we can make the biggest impact if we can get a constitutional amendment to say that corporations are people in our for our constitution. That'd be huge. Everything else could then follow. In my mind.
No, absolutely a great cause. They're an affiliate of ours. We work a lot with them and getting our memberships together and backing their actions. So, absolutely, I think it goes hand in hand, and you're absolutely right. But in the meantime, I think it comes down to something you had pointed out earlier in the conversation, which is just staying informed and
yeah.
knowing what it is that these folks at least say they plan on doing with the powers that we have invested in them, to put a little spin on the old marriage vows.
Well, thank you very much. I have to get going, and I'm going to write a letter to the editor about this article. I think people should be aware, and I'll try to come up with some clever way to get my Tea Party friends to join in on the cause.
That sounds beautiful, Chris. Hope to hear you down the road on another show, and keep on fighting, and hopefully also to interact with you on the 535 Project.
Sounds good. You take care.
All right. Have a great night. Chris from WLN, do you remember the name of the city? Somewhere in Washington? Oop. I think I muted WLN instead of... No.
I muted myself.
Oh, okay.
I muted myself.
I was just trying to remember Chris. I was just trying to remember Chris's city in Washington where he lived.
Near Bremerton is what I remember.
Near Bremerton. You know, close enough for government. I love it. So, good to hear people still have the fight. I like that. I wasn't sure, honestly, what I was going to hear tonight, whether it was going to be a lot of, oh, forget it, we can't do anything, we're not powerful enough, what can we do? But it was good to hear our first caller wanted to fight.
Definitely.
So
definitely.
Let's see what our second caller is. I know Patrick Thompson is a fighter, let's bring him into the show. How are you doing tonight, Patrick?
Hey, great. How's it going?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So how about this latest of our scandals, fourth now, by my count, fourth major scandal in the last 5 years?
So how far and how long do we let these guys continue to manipulate the numbers so that the American public just can't make a go of it? It's obnoxious at this point. So I'm reporting just about everything I can. I do have a number of credit cards and mortgages that have been bought and sold over time, and I'm literally watching this dance take place where a lot of my credit is magically being sold from the big banks to little banks. They at one time swallowed them all up. They swallowed all the little bank stuff that I had and consolidated them. Now they're spreading them back out again. So clearly you can see what they're trying to do is when they're getting watched, they start to spread their bets out, which is what they're doing right now. They're getting watched intensely for compliance and other things, and the large institutions are starting to spread their money out again. So I'm reporting just about every bit of movement for what I can to the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. The CFPB has a great reporting engine. They want to know when consumers have been wronged, especially from the financial institutions. I know that they're working on building cases. It takes years to get cases against these guys, but in terms of something that I can actually do and fight back, that's one of the vehicles that I like to take advantage of.
That's interesting. So the Consumer Protection Board, that was that was kind of like the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren, right? And she was supposed to get that appointment, but they snubbed her on it. And my understanding was that has been seriously underfunded.
Exactly.
But it sounds like maybe they're making some progress.
Yes. Yeah, so can you imagine? Yeah, they couldn't put Elizabeth Warren in there because she would have spanked them, right?
You bet.
So you know that the party, well, I would say one particular party, really did not want her to have that post. So they made it, you know, very difficult for her to take, which is okay. She went somewhere else. You know she's going to show up again. And, yes, they didn't fund that agency very well as could be. You know, it's one of the few agencies that's really about the public. Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. All these other guys, Securities and Exchange Commission, Federal Reserve Bank, all those guys, they're not for us. They're for the banks. In fact, they're not even government. You know, they have these names on them. Federal is not, they're not government, neither is SEC. So they're supposed to be, SEC is supposed to be watchdog, but they're underfunded, and they work for the investment houses. They don't work for us. They're not a John Q. Public or Jane Q. Public facing institution. So we don't have consumer CFPBs, Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, is one of the only tools we have. It is one of the, you know, it's the new agency, but it does have a feedback engine. You know, you can go on there and actually report what your financial institution is doing to you. And my hopes are someday they get enough evidence built with enough people that they can go in and put some introspection on some of these guys. They're just getting away with the worst, absolute worst, behind-the-scenes, you know, swapping money here and there, manipulating money here and there, manipulating interest rates. People, ordinary citizens never see it. They just know that, hey, how come my interest rate is this and how come my terms are this? They don't see all this behind-the-scenes stuff. So
nope.
Secret.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think the reporter, I think Matt, we're still trying to figure out how to pronounce his last name. Matt Taibbi. I think I should just quit while I'm behind. Let's just call him Matt. I'm sorry. But that's exactly what he's saying. I mean, he's making these grand comparisons to some of the most, you know, notorious groups. I mean, you know, did the Illuminati exist? I don't know. I had a neighbor in Georgia that told me that he knew everything that there was to know. He was a Mason. His parents were Masons. And yes, it's true. Masons ran the world and da 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 this. And I could tell you stuff, but I'd have to kill you. It's one of those guys. But he said, oh, yeah, it's for real. And, you know, you go, yeah, go away, right? You know, but you know what? Stuff like this really makes you think that, oh, my word, maybe we've been wrong all this time.
By the way, it's Greg in chat room says it's Matt Taibbi.
Taibbi, okay. I'll buy that. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
No, that was Greg. Thanks, Greg.
Greg. Thank you, Greg. Oh, right, Greg. I'm doing 13 things at once. I'm also trying to get the Consumer Protection Board's website up so we can get that posted into the chat room.
CFPB, Consumer Finance.
Oh, is it CFPB.com?
There you go.
Or .gov.
.gov.
Okay. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, they're you know, it's funny and. So now that I'm on the conspiracy theorist role in my head, so what did we just talk about? So they make sure Elizabeth Warren doesn't get to chair the thing, then they underfund it. So have they created a paper tiger that is there just to appease us, to make us believe that it's actually they're going to do something when in essence they just have no power to do anything?
Yep.
Not unless we use it. If we use it.
Well, if you were in power to protect your system and way of life, wouldn't you?
No, not necessarily. Yes, I guess. I guess if I had no morals. I suppose if I only cared about me and my friends doing well, sure, I suppose. And you know what? Maybe it's me. I mean, I grew up as a child of the 60s, and I was just a little too late to hear, but our teachers would always tell, especially in high school, would tell stories about how in the 40s and the 50s that they would be more than happy to leave. They could leave the room, go down the halls, talk to another teacher for 10 minutes, and they could leave their purse smack on the desk, and they never had to worry about anything being missing when they came back. I guess I'm just not old enough to comprehend that way of life, right? Because it just seems like, I mean, even if that was the case, that's what do we need? We need Jack. Where's Jack Golding? We need Jack. We got to get Jack on the hotline. I mean,
Jack,
if it was
real, when
did it
call in?
When did it turn? When did it turn this corner? When did we turn this corner where it's just all about me? And if I have to step on everybody else's head to get ahead, I really don't care.
Wasn't that in the 80s?
Well, the go-go 80s. I mean, that seems to be the poster child for the decade of destruction. But it's just horrible. But maybe, you know what, Robert Rodrigo just raised his hand.
Yeah.
So you know what, he is a vast... cauldron
and
of knowledge.
And I'm laughing because Greg Rusick in the chat room just posted it started with Gordon Gekko in the 80s and Greed is Good.
Greed is Good. So
Patsy,
you want to hang out and we'll do this Egberto style and get Robert in here? Patrick?
Mr. Roberto? I'm here.
Okay.
Better than that.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm good. It's been a long, rough day, but I had to chime in because of your subject matter and to say hello anyway. I have to vote for the 80s as well. You know, I think a lot of things changed when Ronnie became president in a lot of aspects of our government. You know, the military-industrial complex got its first real kick charge, you know, since I gave the warning. It really wasn't a lot of stuff done. They tried to do it in various aspects, but it really wasn't a buildup in Vietnam even. But when Reagan became president, that was one aspect that blew up. Federal prison industries blew up at that time. Social programs changed. Wealth inequality started. You know, and if you look at a lot of the people who are involved in even super PACs, you know, just start with Dick Cheney and work your way from there, or the Halliburton crew, or a lot of these major lobbyist players from both sides of the aisle. You know, I was disappointed when Barack Obama became president and one of the first people he wanted to put on his cabinet was Tom Daschle. I wanted to pull my hair out. You know, it really seems like a lot of the players from that time frame really found their niche, and a lot of the problems that we're facing started then. And it really has been a 30-year issue when it comes to what's going on with the economy. And this stuff with the banking industry, you know, is a lot older than George Bush, of course. You know, if you look at Glass-Steagall and you look at the savings and loans issues that happened even before Clinton, you know, we've been kind of down this path since Reagan. I think a lot of it had to do with the way Carter's presidency ended and the way that whole election cycle happened and how badly thought of, and some of it rightly, of course, Carter's presidency was, you know, it was really taken advantage of. And then, of course, that was also when they started inducting religion back in politics as well, with the moral majority getting a seat in the White House, basically. So a lot of things went on there that kind of brought us down this path, I would say.
Well, and not to put too fine a point on it, but don't forget also the Iran hostage crisis was happening during that election as well.
I mean, I was in the Navy, and one of the worst things that I remember about that time frame was Ollie and Poindexter, and that whole fiasco with trading arms for hostages, and then arming the guerrillas in Central America. I mean, we basically created Noriega at that time as well, you know, and that chase went on later. There's so much that went on in that time frame. And what's interesting to me, of course, in this polarization, and we saw it so much in the election cycle last year, you know, I guess one of 25 things that got me going last year was all of the touting of the Reagan years, and it was beyond me how soon people forget about what really happened during those years. And of course, there was plenty of good. There's plenty of good in everything, you know, in all the, you can pick and choose what you want, but overall, those 8 years are going to go down, in my opinion, later on. It's going to be, wow. You know, a good example of the economics is how Stockman is screaming and ranting and raving about the stuff that's been going on and where the parties are now and where our economic policies are and some of the mistakes that happened back then as well. A lot of information coming out slowly but surely, but it's coming out, you know, and I don't know. We are, as we all know, we are in deep trouble, and the more we pull back the layers, the more we see why, and the less answers we have to do it other than let's clean a house and start over again. I don't know where else to go sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. because we're not an organization that is in the political process in the sense of having, you know, like a Tea Party, for example, where they have, you know, we don't have the coffee party candidates. We don't do that. We're just citizen action, you know, citizen activists trying to fix what's going on by information and activism and making people aware. But they are wearing me out. They are really getting to us, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to fight. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. But again, you know, what this show is, you know, the stuff that Dan put out about this show, which you put out about the show, it's amazing. You know, how it just, it's more and more and more. And it's all about stealing. In fact, in my opinion, it's all about taking the money and running.
Yeah, it is definitely mind-boggling, and you touched on a few hundred points there, as you are wont to do, and they're all great, great salient points, and it's like rushing through my head now which ones I want to go back and talk about. But it is great that people are willing to fight. I mean, hey, you know, Robert, have you and Patrick ever met, like, in person? I'm just curious.
No, we have not. We need to. There's no question we need to. You know, I actually, it's funny. I was doing a show one night. We're talking, Patrick was on, and another gentleman who had chimed in from Texas, who had run. And he was talking about how he was fired. I actually offered him a job because he was not being allowed to work and run for office at the same time by his company because of his politics. It was amazing to hear. And, of course, Patrick was discussing about what was going on in the process. He had a lot of good information on how the media treated him, or how, shall I say, didn't treat him, basically, you know, and how money was, you know, such, you basically had a money has to even be, have an interest in you when you're running, which is so ridiculous.
His mic is open. Now, first of all, Patrick, do you prefer Patrick or Pat?
Hey, it doesn't matter as long as it doesn't get ambiguous.
Yes, wonderful Saturday Night Live reference, beauty. So somebody, like, throw out a place and a time. I don't know. I want to be there. I'm going to fly to Atlanta. I want to be in on this meeting.
Well, if the three of us get together, I'm going to be a campaign manager and somebody's running for office. That's all I got. I don't know if we're going to do it in Atlanta because I'd want to win. But anyway.
so step one, we move.
Well, I can't. My son is thriving here, and it drives me crazy because, boy, let me tell you, Georgia is. What did I read today here that was just, again, mind-boggling things that are going on. Georgia's a trip.
We're still trying to integrate our proms here.
Yeah, really. Exactly. You know. It's funny. But you just picking and choosing a subject, for example, and Patrick will know this as well. But when I get into a discussion with somebody about guns, you know, and my view about the gun thing is that, you know, I, my libertarian side, you know, I basically say I think if I'm going to support all the amendments of the Constitution, I have to say that I have to support the Second Amendment, even though I hate guns in society. But I really would be opposed to laws that would remove guns from society. But that's not what we were happening. But I tell people all the time, I says, you know, how I view the gun issue is that in the state of Georgia, I can sell guns to anybody I want and never, ever even identify them. And anybody who wants to buy a gun in this country can come to Georgia and buy one. And Patrick can chime in on that. because that's what goes on in this state. And I don't mean just at the gun shows. They are wide open in the state. And we're not even the worst one. So whenever,
yeah,
I hear
yeah,
the
we
stuff,
are.
It's like, nuts. Oh, we're crazy here. You need a gun here.
Well, we're gun shop for the world, and we are, I think we're number three or four in gun sales, and one of the secret things that's going on when you talk about conspiracies is, it's not even a conspiracy, is that our regular Georgia gun shops all have websites, or all sell their guns on websites. So
yeah,
they're not really selling and doing the background check through the shop the traditional way. They're just out on the net selling away.
Yeah.
Whoever wants a gun.
Yeah, they really do. It's so wide open here. And I tell people, just come here and buy a gun. If you don't believe me, just come here. This is a strange place. You know, I was involved in construction at the Kia plant in West Point, Georgia, which is down close to the Alabama border, right above Auburn and Opelika, Alabama. And Kia came in, and, you know, it was a typical situation like so many of them. They talk about corporate subsidies at the federal level. Well, there was some information, I think, that originated from either Egberto or Michael or somebody was talking, or even maybe you, Dan, where you were talking about the local, or Janine, somebody put out there the way the local states, the local governments and state governments were also doing the subsidies. They listed the whole thing, and I multiplied it times 10 all over the place as I could. And I thought of Kia, because Sonny Perdue here was the governor, and Kia ran roughshod over a ton of people in the construction business. And, of course, this was right before the recession when this was going on, literally months before the recession. And Kia got all these subsidies because they were going to bring all these jobs. And in the meantime, people went down there and built the place. And I guarantee you half the subcontractors that worked in that place never got a dime and will run out of business. Now, meanwhile, these guys, because I filed a 343-page lien against them for work that I did down there that they just basically refused to pay me, even though they agreed to pay it to me in writing when I did it. And I had to go through the whole court process, and, of course, I lasted long enough to get money. But not too many people can do that, and I just refused to stop. I didn't care if I didn't work again. I was going to get my money. And they did that, and in the meantime, they got a blank check from old Sonny Perdue down here like you wouldn't believe. No taxes and on top of subsidies. And they do it, of course. Walmart gets them all over the place. There's a Walmart in my neighborhood up here that they built one. They got all the tax breaks, and they didn't like the location, so they moved to a different location, and the place is just an empty lot.
Wait, are you talking about the one off of 92, right off of 535?
That's the one.
It's now a church.
The one. There you go. That's the one.
No, you and I were. If that's your neighborhood, we're virtually neighbors.
Yeah, I live on Lake Altoona.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so
I live at 92 in Trickham. 92 in Trickham.
I built the Lifetime Fitness, Patrick.
Yeah, Lifetime Fitness.
On 92 by Trickham.
Yeah, I'm right near there.
I built that.
Yeah, I'm right there. So you
all
know,
right, so if you're just tuning in, welcome to Georgia. Welcome to Cobb County Politics. It's a new coffee party show where three people that used to live right near each other, well, two that still do, get together
absolutely,
and talk about running
absolutely
for Congress and Shay's Rebellion and all the other good stuff.
There you go. Well, Dan, you're coming down here, so we're going to redo the coffee party Atlanta, right? We're gonna get it going and yes.
Part of my new role on the board is what they call channels director. So
right.
My job is really to help out local chapters as well as to coordinate your activities with any other of our sister
sure
organization activities like
sure
like Move to Amend and Common
and
Cause.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, kind of like part of my, I volunteered to do that job because, well, it's what I've done for a living for a long time, and I like to think I'm
sure
somewhat good at it. But to me, it's that the whole thing is that, you know, we talk about we hear about the 98%, but to me, it's not the 98%. It's 98.1%. And if we can just figure out how to get everybody together, that's how you become the 98%. And
I think one of the hardest things about what we are doing here in the negative, or not negative, but hard things, that we're not in a room together. I mean, I would love to be around so many of the people that I've come to know in just through the coffee party and the sister organizations for a week, let's say. And, I mean, you know, you have these things go through your head. How can we just, you know, converge on Washington and make a difference? You know, I think, of course, of Martin Luther King's rally. You know, there really hasn't been anything like that ever again. You know, there's been attempts, but nothing like that. And that's what, you know, that is what we need. I guess. I think it's
a great idea. In 2010, before I joined the party, I know that there was a meeting. I want to say it was in Nashville or Memphis, somewhere local. Yeah, like Nashville, I think. Mm-hmm. And there was talk about it at the board retreat. There was talk about doing that again. I think that's vital. I agree with you. I do business internationally now, so my business is either by phone or email, but when I do go on, and again on a plane, and I do go visit with somebody, there's something to that extra dynamic of the social, direct social interaction that you just can't, you can't get it on the phone, you can't get it on the radio, you can't get it on WebEx even, or teleconference. But so I'm with you. I'm a big proponent of personal interaction.
Yeah, there are amazing people that are involved in the coffee party. You're included in that. I mean, you guys, I love it. You know, and I'd like to be around it, and who knows what comes out of it.
So here's what I would like to propose that we maybe get into is to have an event that isn't really about the coffee party, but it's about some issue. For example, the credit unions and the small banks actually have people that go out, especially the credit unions, they have people that go out and do presentations, of course, from the National Credit Union Association. But they will go out and give presentations to small businesses and to communities about, you know, why you would want to use a credit union over a big bank. Why you want to do business with them, and it turns it more into a bigger tent where you can talk about the issues of financial things that have happened to us. You get maybe a third party to present. Same thing around healthcare. Maybe you have a healthcare clinic where it's wrapped around, you know, hey, here's the positives of the healthcare plan, because there's I see a lot of things out there. In fact, there was one today, Roberto, at Kennesaw. Kennesaw had the people from WellPoint. I think their senior vice president of legal affairs was there speaking about, you know, how Obamacare is going to change your medical life. Okay, so I know where they're coming from. They're going to tell the old evil fear stories, and of course you have the legal affairs guy from WellPoint. One of the worst healthcare companies here in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Telling the story. So it's from their perspective, but where's our perspective? So
you know,
I'm interested
that you bring that up because I have a cousin who is in the healthcare business, and he is anti Obamacare, and he had a conversation with me not too long ago about it. And understanding his slant, I went and asked my insurance agent here in Georgia the same very questions, because my cousin raised some concerns to me. And she pretty much ran down the whole spiel. And I said, so tell me, where is that? Where can I read that? Where's the evidence? She goes, well, that's a prediction. And I'm like, there it is. You know, this is what's coming down the pipe. You're absolutely right. Nobody's read the damn thing. And that also blows my, you know, oh, it's 1,000 pages long. Are you kidding me? So is my favorite book, The Myth of Avalon, is 1,000 pages long. Read the damn bill. You know, they just want to listen to Sean Hannity. I mean, stop. Just read the bill.
Yes, read it and read the. And there are presentations out there that summarize it, so you don't have to read the whole thing.
Right.
And you know what? If we allow the health insurance companies to continue to raise the rates, then it's really our problem, because they're implementing stuff that's supposed to help it. But if we let them just continue to raise the rates when they've been told to cut it out, it's the same issue we're talking about here with the financial institutions. It's time to call them on it. You just got to call him.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Congress doesn't help by having secret meetings about trying to exempt themselves from the Health Care Act. I'm like, you're kidding me. Really? That's what you guys are going to do at this time? That helps. Because here we have we're right before the midterm elections, and they're doing it both sides of the aisle, whatever that means.
Why not? I mean, they did the same thing with the ban on insider trading. That took 30 seconds to get through, where they basically wiped out the rules that they had put in less than one year ago, saying they could not trade on insider information. Boom.
Right, just like that, and it sailed right through. But the thing with the Affordable Health Care Act is, of course, them doing that, but of all the laws, of all the times, you want to talk about blowing something up, that's the way to do it. You blow it right up, because there's nothing that's more polarizing in this president's term than that particular legislative act. He wrote it, he didn't write it, but you know what I mean. And he wanted it. It was his signature piece of legislation, and it's been. I mean, how many times are they up to trying to repeal it now in the House? It's over 30.
Yeah.
So let's just go back and say we're going to have secret meetings because we feel that our interns won't be able to afford it. And I'm like, oh my God, they're not saying that. Please don't say that. Just forget it. Now it's okay. You know, it hasn't even been implemented. That's the biggest thing about it. It's not implemented yet. The majority of it is not even here, but it's a disaster. I love it.
Robert, you remind me of myself. I'm constantly saying after a rant like that, and you know, and someday I'll get passionate about this issue.
So there are some insurance companies that are fully behind and actually carrying. They realize where things are going, and rather than try to slow everything down or stop everything, they've gotten out on the forefront. So there are a few health
companies. Oh, absolutely. There are
health,
absolutely.
Actually, health insurance companies.
But in the end, aren't they recipients of the big benefit? I mean, doesn't the law say to the 46 million people that did have insurance, you now have to have insurance by 2014?
There you go.
Exactly.
And that was one of the things. It was they talk about how things are going to be expensive. Meanwhile, the insurance companies are sitting there getting ready to get paid because all these other people have to get on board. And, of course, so you knew that there were going to be strong insurance. The big one in Florida jumped right on board, is hooking it up. The guy that's attached to, not Singing River, but anyway, there were stories about it. I'm sure you guys saw it. And they were all on board getting it ready because they're going to get a whole bunch of new business. And so everybody breaks out. So all of this, I don't know what the mindset is behind trying to destroy something. It's like I told people when they were talking about bringing the insurance game into the gun argument, where they were going to have people like California's doing the liability insurance. And I'm like, all they did was bring another big-time lobbyer into the game. Now watch what happens. Now there's going to be money going both ways. And then we'll see how all this shakes out, because that's exactly what they did by having that. I guarantee you the insurance company's like, they're salivating with all the money they're going to make from the liability insurance for gun ownership. Oh, they love it. Please, we'll start funneling money that way. So in 3-4 years, we're going to see big-time legislation all across the country about that. Guarantee it.
Right on. By the way, that reminds me, did anyone catch, they were running a movie this week, a lot of the, I think it was Turner was running the movie Runaway Jury. Anybody ever see that?
John Cusack, right?
Yes, John Cusack.
Yeah.
The lawyers were the big lawyers, Dustin Hoffman. Just a great, you know, that was from 1993, I think, but the gun issue thing, boy, it hasn't changed a bit. That's what it was all about. It was, guns versus guns, it was a lawsuit about a gun company being liable for what they were selling. Very interesting movie.
Law and Order even did a really good one on it one time, actually, even.
They did.
On that subject about bringing up, about, you know, the gun liability with it. You know, the thing about if people want to say, they talk about the gun issue, and if they want to talk about how it's a Second Amendment issue, fine. But what they failed to miss with this money lobbying from the gun manufacturers is that guns do not go away when you buy them. If you take care of them, they last forever. So the only market for the gun manufacturers to make a profit is to sell more guns, because yep. They don't have used gun trade-ins like they do cars. You know, it's all about the new guns. So they want to be able to sell as much as they can because that's what it's all about. It's nothing more than that. You know, taking aside the fact, yeah, we have a Second Amendment that says we can have guns. Okay, great. Got it. Fantastic.
Hey guys, if I can interrupt that, we had somebody jump into the chat room that just logged on that was tuning in hoping to hear more about the index fixing. The second one that came on top of the LIBOR scandal now, and Angel's question was, where did the billions of dollars in fines that they levied on the LIBOR scandal, where did they go? And earlier today, I asked Debbie Lynn if she got a check, and I told her I hadn't. So I don't know the answer to that.
I thought when LIBOR they essentially, like you said in your post for the show, LIBOR was pretty much, they said, fine, we're good. There's no criminal activity unless I miss something. So I don't know if they, I mean, as far as...
Well,
they
nailed Barclays alone for like $2.5 billion in fines.
Oh, you know, that's right. I did see that. That's right. I remember that.
When I brought that up earlier in the show, I was like... Yeah, I didn't get mine.
No,
and
that led us into the
joke about the $2 billion in consultants fees that were paid out to the people who were looking over the robo signing loans,
sure.
To which each person on the average got
$300. You know, that's a damn good question. That is a damn good question. And your example there is very good because about that similar to what you just described. Maybe it is what you were talking about, the foreclosure stuff. Yeah, that's what it is, the $300. That's right. That is where that came from. Isn't that amazing? $300. I saw that. I'm like, you're kidding me. And where's the anger? I don't get it. We are apathetic.
Well, that's what I posed it in my when I promoted the show earlier in the day on Facebook is I gave four choices. We're either gullible, stupid, powerless, or I forgot the fourth
Watching
one I did.
Definitely
was mad at me because none of them were positive.
Yeah. How much news coverage does that get?
Well, that's it. I mean, even this thing, which has been around for really almost 30 days now, is just now getting press.
Yeah, it's almost nowhere.
That's very true. It isn't just a couple of bits and pieces over the last few days, right? And it's a major story. It's as big as it gets. There's another one too that's out there about how they. The Economist, somebody mentioned it the other day, the Economist that kind of blew apart the Powell, the wonderful Powell papers, and how to discredit that whole economic theory. And that also didn't get much play. The White House Correspondents' Dinner was CNN is covering everything from all sides so they can get something right. That was a great show. I thought Obama was like, wow, that's exactly what happened. He goes, yeah, I'm glad they cover all sides of an issue so they can get at least one of them right or whatever he said. I laughed at that.
I will tell you on a totally personal note, I love Jon Stewart and his work, some funnier than
absolutely.
Others. The funniest piece I've ever seen him do was the day when they reported on the Supreme Court handing down the decision on Obamacare. And whether it was constitutional or not, I never laughed so hard in my life at a bit, one of his bits. And then Colbert did a great one too, which culminated with
news. I'm sure you saw it. It was all over the place where he just vilified Fox News on their attack of our Bill of Rights on the basis of the Boston thing. I mean, there was some sound bites from there that was just off the chart. You know, like when Ann Coulter said they should just illegalize the headdress for the woman. I'm like, oh my God, you know, police state all the way, guys. I mean, really? You know, let's not have anything in but the way we want to do it. And he told
that's
him,
right. He went through the entire Constitution.
He crossed
out the entire Constitution.
Except the Second Amendment.
Exactly.
One of my libertarian things is a lot of times libertarians from the conservative side, they don't have any interest in anything other than the Second Amendment. And it amazes me. I have these discussions all the time, and I'm anti-Second Amendment, but I'm going to support it until we repeal it. It's the law of the land.
Well, okay, I hear you say that, Robert, and I'm with you. I mean, I am not for – I could never get behind any gun bill that would take reasonable weapons out of the hands of good people and leave them defenseless. I could never do that. So let me ask you this question, and then I want to get back to Angels, because Greg Rustick was nice enough to point me in the direction of an article that talked about the LIBOR fines.
Sure.
So just – on the background check, did you have any problem with background checks?
We should have background checks. We should have registration of guns. We should actually have it. It should actually all be retroactive, where we know who has them, where they have them. I don't care if you're selling it to your son, giving it to your son. We need to know who has the guns, because if you cannot do background checks reasonably without knowing everybody who's involved. And it is ludicrous for me to hear that we can't do them, that's unreasonable, or they want to take our guns. They already know where we are. All of us who own homes, they know how to find us. All of us who have telephone numbers, they know how to find us. Everybody who registers a car, they know how to find us. It's an absurd argument. It's so circular. There's no reason why we cannot have background checks. If I want to hire somebody, they got to go get their driving record. If I want to go rent an apartment for my company for guys to work with, I have to give them the names of everybody that's going to be there, because they're going to run background checks on them. They just to live in an apartment. So it is ludicrous when I hear that it does not work, because the whole idea is to keep the guns out of the hands of the people who shouldn't have them, criminals and the like. How do you do that unless you have some kind of a check? It can't be done, and it should be done at all the gun shows. It could be done in private sales. I don't care.
Okay, cool. Patrick, if you don't mind, I'd like to hear your opinion, but I do want to get back to Angel's question. So Greg pointed me to and he posted in the chat room a great article that is very, very in depth in pointing out all of the different banks and the fines they paid. It's a lot of information, so of course I was only able to skim it. But, Greg, I don't see anything that says what happens to that money. Did I miss that? I mean, it says, yes, these guys paid this much, these guys paid this much, but I don't see anything that says, and here's what happens with that money. Like a fund was started to give Angel the money back. Yes, there is something in the article that says what happened to it, or no, there is nothing in there. This is fun. I'm having a conversation on chat.
I need to, you know, if you wouldn't mind reposting that, because I'm actually in a car, but if you wouldn't mind reposting that somewhere, I'd love to read that, because that's real important.
And by the way, if they did pay, that's the fine. So if they did pay, did they get terms? Like this is to be paid over X number of years or whatever. That's
right.
One of the things they never talk about.
Oh, right. So Greg's posting to the DOJ and FTC. Yeah. No. I get that. Was there a fund set up to get what I'm looking at for, Greg, is was there some fund set up or some program set up to funnel that money back to the injured parties?
Yeah, right.
And I think the answer is going to be no. And the answer is going to be LOL, yeah. Yes, I'm dreaming. I can dream. Greg said, "You're dreaming." I'm like, "Yeah, why not? Absolutely."
That's
Greg, if you don't mind posting, if you could repost the.
That's a good question. Where the money went, though? That's a good question. Where is that? I mean, I don't.
Well,
what's
the FTC and the DOJ?
Okay, so what does that mean? So the DOJ, Eric Holder's got his hand. I mean, what does that mean? goes into some drug fund so they can they can have more war against drugs. I mean, what do they use it for? It goes to a criminal unit where they can go after guys more that do the same thing. I mean, what do they do with it? I mean, like the DEA, when they go out and get, you know, when they get money, they get, put it into a fund where they can go back and get more guys. So what are they doing with that money? That's a lot of money.
I agree. And darn it, we lost passion. So I didn't get to hear his answer on the whole gun control issue. But I think, but you and I are certainly in lockstep on this. And here's what angers me. If here are two guys that say no way, banning guns not going to happen. We're not going to leave good people defenseless. Not going to happen. But yeah, I got no problem with background checks. Now, so what was so difficult about that? Here are two guys willing to defend legitimacy to a point of the Second Amendment, and in that we line up with some of the more crazy. You'll pry them out of my cold dead hands when you come for me or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then we go, yeah, background checks, yeah, it's a great idea.
Don't you think, Dan, to have any other position makes us hypocrites if we're going to support the Bill of Rights? I mean, I think that's the only reasonable thing that we can do, figure out a way to support it, even though, I would love it if the Second Amendment was appealed and we take guns out of society in the world. Let's have peace. I'm all for it. It's not going to happen. So it's our law. Let's figure it out where it's responsible, like we have everything else. You know, to go a step further, you know, when you talk about the people pushing the Second Amendment, They're usually anti-abortion, which is a Fourth Amendment issue, and they don't realize that because it's never argued that way. It's always pro-life, pro-choice, but it's a Fourth Amendment issue. It's a privacy issue, and privacy is in the Fourth Amendment. And whenever you hear arguments from either side, they forget that. Nobody goes and reads that 7-2 decision. Everybody just talks about pro-choice, pro-life. Or when they talk about same-sex marriage, which they don't like, the reason that it's a right is because the states regulate marriage. If they didn't regulate marriage, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But because the states decided to regulate marriage, everybody's got to be regulated the same way. You cannot pick and choose. That's why it's a due process issue. Nobody talks about it that way. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, my God, it's a moral system because they want to bring religion in. Or there was an incident in Alabama just recently. Okay, I looked at all Alabama. A lot of incidents in Alabama, let me tell you. So they have this thing where, I think it was Alabama. Mississippi. I'm sorry. It was Mississippi, another good one. So they have it in Mississippi where this school demands the attendance of their high school kids, and they take them to a church assembly, and they have church in a public school. And I'm like, oh, great. Okay. So my response to this was, when I posted the story, was, you know, maybe if it was done by an unpopular religion, and I didn't name any, but we all know what I mean when I say that, maybe if it was done with an unpopular religion the exact same way, people would understand how wrong this is because they wouldn't like the fact that it was an unpopular religion. You can't do it because it's the First Amendment to the Constitution, but you don't hear that. They want to have school prayer and they want to have guns. Well, it doesn't work that way. Our country is surrounded by laws, and it drives me crazy. I have discussions with libertarians. It drives me crazy. No, we got to do it this way. No, it's not what that's not what it says. So I'm not the hypocrite. Other people are, because all they want to care about is the Second Amendment. Can't take our guns. Can't take our guns.
Okay. Fair enough. fair enough. Yeah, and I got to tell you, I just had a very proud moment. I'm going to get a little personal here. I just had a very proud moment. My son is actually who lives in my house in Marietta, who tried to hook up with Patrick, and I said, here's a guy, get involved with this campaign, get in the game, just get a taste of it, find out what it's like. You have a great chance. And he was busy with his schoolwork, and he never got around to it. But he just posted, like, a super intelligent comment in the chat room, and I am so proud.
Awesome.
I am so proud.
Good for him.
He's finally getting it. And I'll tell you what, he's 21. Yeah. And I constantly tell people his age, pardon my French, our generation has screwed this up beyond belief, and you people better rise up and get involved en masse now, because you are the ones who are going to inherit the shitstorm that we've left you.
Yes, indeed.
And so the youth of America.
Tell me how to move out of care. Tom has got to move out of Marietta, though, because it's too much time.
Well, he's a ward of the state at this point. He's not. He's still going to college, so he doesn't. Look, he just wrote, "Get me out!" All exclamation marks.
I understand.
Hey,
dude,
you can come to Portland anytime you want. There, I'm done with my personal conversations to radio show. I owe it to the listeners. Speaking of which. I wanted to get back to the whole banking scandal, but before we do, I realize it's we've had an hour and a half of really good conversation, and I've yet to give out our public affairs messaging here. So I need to do that for a second. So if you just can hold on, Mr. Rodrigo, I will be right back to you. But just wanted to give the standard public service address announcements, which is, this is Dan Aronson, and you are listening to Press One for Democracy on Coffee Party Radio, aired here every Monday night at its new starting time, which is 6 p.m. on the Pacific Standard Time on the Pacific Coast, and 9 p.m. on the Eastern Standard Time. So again, our friends out east can join us and still get their 8 hours in. Tomorrow night, you will be able to hear Michael Charney, right-leaning, and Eric Beiler, left-leaning, two brilliant guys with very passionate about their points and showing us how transpartisan is done on the Middle Ground. And the Middle Ground airs again every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can join in for an hour and a half of very lively conversations and a lot of times good guests, very knowledgeable and actually very prominent guests at times. So I highly encourage that. Then for those of you who are free in the afternoons, you can lunch with Loudon on Thursdays. Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molyneux, who you heard earlier helping me co-host, get together at noon on the Pacific Standard Time for lunch, and 3 p.m. for you folks out on the East Coast, and you know, talk about a myriad of topics, about getting money out of politics to women's rights. Janine and Debbie Lynn are very active in the work group Coffee Party Women Coffee. It's boy, she's going to shoot me now. I'm getting this wrong, but it's Coffee Party for Women, and it's all about empowering women and giving them, you know, equal rights, equal pay, all that good stuff, which they should have. It's kind of ridiculous that we live in this day and age and they don't have that now, and we're still talking about having to go out and get it legislatively, but here we are. And then on Saturdays, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Pacific Coast Time. It's a roundtable discussion where Egberto will throw open 7-8 mics at a time. You're likely to hear a lot of the folks you hear on this show as well, just discussing the issues of the day. And, again, always transpartisan, fact-based civil discussions, looking for solutions to our common problems. So with that, I'll bring Roberto. Is it my recollection, Robert, or does Egberto call you Roberto?
He calls me Roberto, yeah.
He does. So now I've gotten into that habit as well. But are you Roberto?
It's okay. I'm half Spanish. It works. It's okay.
Well, it's either
actually,
your name
I'm
or it's not. I'm kind of picky about getting people's names the way they want them to.
I'm half Spanish, half Sicilian. Roberto works, trust me.
Okay, cool. Cool beans. So it is not too late. We still have some time left on the show. If you want to call in, the number to call in, 646-929-2495. And when you call in, just press 1 on your keypad, and that will let me know that you want to get on the conversation. The topic for the show today was the newest, latest, and greatest scandal. One that, according to Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone, has him reeling backwards to the point where he's saying that he's basically apologizing to the conspiracy theorists of the world, skeptics who didn't believe about the control of the banks or the Rothschilds or the Masons or the Illuminati. We owe you a big fat apology. It appears that you were right. So
And
amazing
MIT
article.
Yeah, MIT professor Andrew Lowe said it dwarfs by orders of magnitude any financial scam in the history of markets. All right. Now, that was about the LIBOR scandal, which has actually been fully vetted, and folks were fined, although we're not sure exactly where that money went. But now it turns out that they're investigating up to 15 of the world's largest banks for manipulating the ISDA fix, a benchmark number used around the world to calculate the prices of interest rate swaps. So, again, I'm not a financial whiz, but as I see, the way I've got this cobbled together in my mind is, so that these things were created, or credit swap defaults were created, so that people could hedge against rising interest rates. So if I have a huge amount of debt, if I'm a municipality and I decide I'm going to do a massive sewer system overhaul and it's going to cost me $20 million, I will often get into these types of securities in order to hedge against interest rates going up, because I'm funding it all on debt, of course. But then this other index creates the price of those. Well, meanwhile, the LIBOR, which actually dictates the actual interest rate, they were fixing that. So it only makes sense that they would be fixing then these securities that were there to hedge against the increase in interest. And it's to me, again, and it's somebody smarter than me, I wish would get on the phone and tell me exactly if I'm right or wrong, but it seems to me it's the ultimate insider trading. If I'm controlling the interest rates, then I sure as heck know when to buy or sell the securities that are used to hedge against interest rate increases. So I know the stock is going up. I know the price of it's like knowing the price of a stock is going up and being able to buy it. I know. Do you have a different take on that, Robert?
It's an obvious. The whole point of insider trading is that it's a risk-free transaction. You know, and the way they're doing it is that it really is that there's no trading at all. I mean, they're just making money off of what they set up. It's hard. I don't even know how to describe it. It's an amazing situation. And again, like you say, apologize to the conspiracy theorists is definitely needed. You know, I hate Alex Jones, but oh boy, I don't know how do we fix it? Okay, so what that it's exposed? Okay, so let's say, it's out there. Obviously, it's going on. I think that the evidence is pretty damning. It's pretty lengthy. So now what? What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, well, that was the question I posed from the get-go. And, here's kind of the – let's talk about the right shoe. So we just defined that's the wrong metaphor. We just defined what the right hand is doing. Now let's define what the left hand is doing, because one can't work without the other. The only way they can get away with this is with the complicity of the government.
Absolutely.
Because the government is there to stop them. That's part of their job, is to slap people down when they're doing bad.
But every time we've turned around, and this goes back to why you and I and the rest of the Coffee Party and our sister organizations exist, it all comes down to the payoff, the money in politics. You know, it's so circular. Our society is so circular, but all of the arguments that we have, all of the debates, all of the situations, all of the concerns, all of the problems always wind up back in the almighty dollar's lap, no matter what we're talking about. It always winds up there, and that's what it's all about. You know, if you have, they've created a situation that allows money to rule the day, and greed has been going on since Cain and Abel. We haven't evolved past that. So you fill the pockets up. Nobody's going to bother you because you're going to give them more money, no matter if it's $1,000, $1 million, or whatever. Look at the information that we received about. Recently, when Senator Baucus decided to retire, you know, the Finance Committee has been under the microscope a little bit in the press, in the sense that they're talking about how many people, not only just from him,
but from that entire committee now work on K Street, you know, and have for you know, they're not just talking about recently, they're talking about over the years, which goes back to my comment about Daschle. You know, the lobbyist money that goes through our, forget Citizens United, just the lobbying money that has been going on in this country is age old. Eisenhower warned about it with the military-industrial complex, and that just scratched upon it. The banking industry that was talked about by Teddy Roosevelt, and et cetera, you know, it's all been there, the Fed. All of that's been there, being talked about for all these years, and here we are. So now honest people are trying to expose it, and then and we look at it and go, okay, now what? You know, now I'm glad I have a gun.
Yeah, know, which was, that goes back to my initial show.
There you go.
That's exactly right. So there's a couple things being posted in the chat rooms, right? So Greg actually found where, went back and reread the article. Thank you, Greg, yet again. And said that according to Taibbi, it's basically going into the government's coffers. It's not.
There you go.
There is not earmarked. That's where the fines are going. They're just going back into the general fund. I guess maybe they think it'll help. I don't know. Catch us up on Social Security and Medicaid. I so we can avoid austerity. I don't know. It's just the height of ridiculousness. It's just intellectually as dishonest as it comes. And guess what? I have a great announcement to make, and that is Jack Golding is going to be joining us right now. Jack, how are you doing?
Okay, that's fine.
We've been missing you. We've been talking about you. Your ears must have been burning.
Oh, okay. Just want to comment about several things. I don't know exactly. I think you're talking about the sequestration. Are you talking about the sequestration?
No, we're actually talking about the latest rigging of indices by the major banks, and how it's extended the LIBOR scandal and has now actually spread and a new scandal has emerged where the banks have been fixing rates.
I got a comment about banks. Okay, there should be a small tax. I'm for a small tax on those big banks for the hedge fund operators. They have to pay small tax. And I think I believe in no special characters. Like, all right, take the gun lobby. They're getting away with it. I think both parties are treating them with kid gloves. And I think there should be a tax. It should be treated like a person, like cars, like a, and then there should be no special privileges. It should be that people should be paying a liability insurance on guns, and I think one gun is enough for a. Per person, I think it's enough for defense, and it's not nothing's going to violate the Second Amendment on that.
All right.
Now, as far as the banks, I believe I was sort of against the Fed. Because they can artificially I was against bailing out the banks to begin with, and as far as hedge fund operators, they should be. They should pay a tax.
All right. Sounds great. So, any comments on the fact that the fines that are being levied against banks are simply going back into the general fund, and that there's nothing's being done to
make whole the people, the consumers that were hurt?
Well, that sounds like it stinks. The whole concept of going back in the general fund. They should have a special fund for that. Putting the fine in the bank. And I believe, too, that Elizabeth Warren is the greatest thing to come along since French toast. He was very great to the banks. What, man? Or whatever you like the best, than ice cream or
French toast is great. I like French toast.
Or let's say banana split. That's the best. Mm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, Dan. What? You know, Jack said something that's interesting, Dan, about the bank aspect of it. He mentioned again about how he opposed the bailout of the banks. Think about that aspect and put it with what we're talking about on this show. The LIBOR scandal and the index, and bailing out banks and banks failing. You want to talk about a circular crime? Is how are the banks failing? When it comes right to how is AIG failing, considering the rigging that's going on?
Well, let me answer a question with a question. Let's ask Jack this: How can you call it failing if you know that somebody's going to come and bail you out?
Exactly.
What's your risk? Why not do it?
Exactly.
So you're right, Jack. And once we do it once, what is to stop them from doing it again and again and again? Once they know we're going to be there to bail them out.
They're giving you a royal screwing. And I think the one big mistake, and that got me in a real binder, was the easy credit back in 07. Now I was applying for a job at Walmart in Panorama City, California, when I got approached by a girl who offered me sex and everything else, and her father was a Russian father turned out to be a leader in the Russian mafia in California. Turns out, first thing was owed a big debt to Sears. It was jewelry and furniture, and then got into all the jewelry stores. Like every kiss became a K Jewelers. Veil Jewelers, then cars. Got into cars. I wanted to buy a car for her, for their assistants, their henchmen, or whatever I like to call them. Two cars. And I wound up in debt up to over $100,000. So I say easy credit, and that's why I can't contribute online to anybody. Okay, I could if I was I was offered that. That's the rub. My very bank that I owed a lot of money to, and that was Citibank, and it was also Citibank and another one, Discovery, although I don't think I got involved with Discovery. Discovery was through,
okay.
Discovery is through Sears, I think.
Yeah, Discover Financial, you bet. Yep, there's definitely predatory practices going on with the credit. With credit cards. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, they had already done it as far as, they had already pushed the whole mortgage as far as they could go. So they needed to find some other way
to extend people who might not be necessarily worthy or have the ability to pay down or pay back their debts. They were out there looking for people who were setting people up to fail. And that's, I don't know how you sleep at night when that's your way of doing business. But they did it, and they got away with it. And we're the ones who got, they did us wrong, and they didn't even buy us dinner first.
And you know that six banks have about over 60% of the gross national product as far as assets go.
Yeah, that goes back to the too big to fail. That goes back to the too big to fail issue as well.
Yeah, too big to fail.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be such a thing as too big to fail. And you're talking about spending and saving, you get rid of, one thing you get rid of the deficit, or pay down the debt real good and not affect the people would be to tax, end the war on drugs and end everything in the war of drugs. And then you do, you have a great sense of taxation. You tax medical marijuana, 25% or something like that of receipts. And as far as in Colorado, they have marijuana for the kicks of it. Anybody can buy marijuana.
Yep, so Washington State as well.
What, Washington, D.C. too?
No, Washington State.
There was an interesting case that was decided recently by a U.S. district judge on a lawsuit involving the employers firing people who were using medical marijuana, who had previously used medical marijuana, and the judge said, this is less than a week ago, I think, the judge said in his ruling that the federal law trumps Colorado's recent position both on medical marijuana and completely legalizing it, and the company was allowed to fire them. You know, the marijuana thing, I think the most troubling thing to me about the marijuana position by our federal government has been its ridiculous status of... Oh, let me move away from that noise.
Keep in mind, Robert, we have 2 minutes and 40 seconds left in the show, so if you can...
Oh, well, real quick, is the categorizing of marijuana as a Schedule I narcotic. It's absurd.
Well, they have it more so than heroin or...
it's a Schedule I.
Quaaludes or whatever.
Schedule I narcotic.
Get.
It's an absurd
morphine,
category. And
morphine and cocaine is not considered.
Cocaine. It's higher than cocaine. It's higher than cocaine. It is higher than cocaine. That
cocaine
is
or morphine.
Yeah. So for the first time, they're going to be able to have a hearing on it with the federal circuit. They've never gotten as far as they have until recently. And the federal circuit has control of that particular thing.
They can raise money. They can raise revenue. You don't have to. Well, you fix the tax code, and I have a procedure for fixing the tax code. Is end all deductions, exemptions, and et cetera, et cetera. And you can use a progressive tax system, maybe four brackets, and lower the rates to a maximum of 25%. Up to $500,000 annually. And then after that, it's going to graduate 30% or 28%. And when you get past a million, it's 30%. And when you get past a billion, it's 50%.
I love it. Well, the little lady in my ear, Jack, just told me there's 60 seconds left, so I'm going to have to wrap up. I thank you, as always, for calling, sir. And if, just in case you missed it, we are moving. We have moved an hour earlier, so we start now at 9 p.m. Eastern time, so 8 p.m. Central time.
It's 8. That's starting next week.
No, that started this week, which is why we're ending the show right now. So I appreciate it, Jack.
Oh,
thanks, and have a great night. Oop, I cut off Jack. Yeah. Hey, have a great night, Jack. Thank you. All right, Robert, you do the same as well. And I will tell everybody, this is Press 1 for Democracy. My name is Dan Aronson. Thank you for joining us. Please tune in next week when we start again at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. It has been a great pleasure. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening.